Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Balance Podcast with me, Molly Raycroft, a well-being and health journalist with a passion for living better. Each episode, we'll speak to a special guest about how they incorporate wellness into their lifestyle. By sharing their stories, we hope you can learn some tips and tricks to finding balance within your own life. In this episode, we'll be speaking to actor Eliza Butterworth. She's fresh from wrapping up the final ever series of The Last Kingdom, where she played Lady Elswith for the past 8 years. Now, she's living in Tenerife, filming for her next role in an upcoming drama called A Town Called Malice. So we'll be chatting about how she prepares to spend months working away from home, how she deals with insecurities when in front of the camera, and how it's been leaving a big part of her life behind. Hi Eliza, how are you doing?
Hi Molly, I'm so well, thank you, and how are you?
Really good, thank you, and excited to be talking to you today because we're going to be talking a bit about how you look after your health and well-being and how that interacts with your acting career, especially as you seem to be going to all different places across the world on these filming sets, which is amazing but must be quite tough on keeping to a routine to look after yourself. But before we get into all that, I think where I'd like to start is understanding, what does having balance in your life mean to you?
I think it just means a sense of feeling kind of whole and complete and sort of in control of yourself. And I know the older I've gotten, I'm 28 now, I sort of think about it every single day in the sense of where I'm lacking control, where I am gaining it, and the things that do bring me joy and happiness, whether that be like a physical thing or something that I'm putting in my body or what I'm getting, sort of almost call them nutrients from, like, you know, your outside world, what you're sort of feeding your mind and your brain, who you're hanging out with. So I think as you get older, you start to balance your life with what does bring you goodness, I guess. So for me, balance is just a sense of recognizing what makes you feel good and learning how to actually bring that into your life more and more and more. So that becomes the norm and that becomes like your next sort of like comfort level and how you can live within those kind of circumstances that you can almost create for yourself once you've learned what you love and enjoy and what makes you feel good.
Is there anything key to that you do to keep yourself healthy? Do you have like the foundations?
When I was younger, I was terrible with my diet and stuff. And I will say, even as a 28-year-old, I get it so wrong. And like, I'm still really working it out in terms of what makes my body feel good. And I am such a cookie monster and I have such a sweet tooth. And I, you know, love all the sort of naughty things in life in terms of like food and things like that. But I feel like I'm getting more in tune with trying to eat fruit and trying to, you know, when it comes to like food, let's say nutrition, being a lot sort of better at acknowledging when I'm gone off piece, or, you know, knowing actually that doesn't, it might make my brain feel good for 10 seconds, but does it make my body feel good in the long run? Absolutely not. So that sense of knowing in a sense balance, because then you can't completely deprive yourself of everything, especially if it's what you love. And if you enjoy sharing, let's say, sweet treats with friends or people bake for you, or you love, you know, eating with your family, there are so many elements of that that it's just so enjoyable that I'd never want to say no to. But when I'm on my own, I'm definitely more in tune with, okay, I need to be healthier here, or, you know, I need to really look after this side of my life. And then with exercise as well, because that's a huge part of our lives. I go in really weird waves of being amazing at exercise, and I can go to the gym loads and I can just love it all, and then absolutely nothing. I'm sort of an all or nothing kind of person. So also recognizing that that in itself isn't the best way to be, because you need to find balance with that. You need to find ways of still getting in all the physical stuff, but knowing how to enjoy it. So I feel like the older I'm getting, the more I'm like, ooh, what makes me feel good? Maybe it's Zumba, maybe it's dancing instead of actually going to the gym.
Is that quite difficult when your schedule gets super busy? Because I know when my schedule gets busy, I succumb to like grabbing the first thing off the shelf or like ordering a takeaway. My diet just goes completely downhill so quickly.
Yeah, I am exactly that. And I think it's just the older I've gotten, the more I care about that more. So I think I'm trying to stay focused on what really matters and just how to feel good. So it's not even necessarily looking different or looking a certain way. It's more just I think about how it makes your body feel and what kind of energy it gives you. Because I, again, the older I've gotten, the more I'm aware of those quick, you know, sugary things or whatever actually gives you a big burst of energy, but doesn't necessarily make you feel good. So yeah, on set, they're so wonderful. The current project I'm working on, they really provide such healthy food. So you kind of can't really go too wrong there, unless you go to like the craft services where all the snacks are, which is obviously where I'm hanging out most of the time. But as long as you're like, you know, clocking yourself with all that, it's pretty good. And it's quite an active job in some ways. You know, oftentimes we're always on our feet. And if you've got a long filming day, they can be, you know, really long days. So you often find that you're really active. You're always talking to people. You're always on the go, especially if it's an action scene. There's a lot kind of demanded of you energy wise. So in a sense, it's important to keep all of that up. But I will say, you know, when I've got like down days for sure, especially where I'm currently filming, which is Tenerife, it's absolutely beautiful. You walk around, there's just the loveliest cafes and restaurants and stuff. So it's nice to experience that as part of the culture.
I feel like in hot weather, you often gravitate to like lighter meals anyway, don't you?
So true. I'm finding myself getting the chicken salad, pollo ensalada, por favor. Like, I'm like, yes. Whereas, you know, I love like burgers and things like that. So it can be quite naughty if I really let myself be. But I think, yeah, out here, you're so right, in the sunshine. I think it just gives you that lighter mood, which is lovely. And just the sense of the sun being around, I do feel like you become more in tune with your body, and because you're sort of more like rooted. I know this sounds really hippy dippy, but in the earth, because, you know, maybe you're not having to wear coats and you're kind of out in the sun, and it makes you feel like, oh, I'm at one with the earth. As silly as that sounds. Whereas in the winter, you're just like, screw this, let me put on a huge parka coat. I don't want to see anyone. Let me eat everything I want. Like, yeah, I'm miserable. Whereas here, I feel like you're more aware of yourself, which is really nice when the sun comes out. So yeah, and that obviously, even sunshine brings such balance. Speaking of like mental health, aside from physical health, but just having some vitamin D is just so ridiculously important. And I know I'm extremely lucky being where I am at the moment that I've kind of got it in abundance. But yeah, it only just makes me even more grateful knowing that once you do have it, it does just change so much your mood and your outlook and attitude. So yeah, even though I obviously live in London, which is not always this sunny, you know, it's nice to really take it in when it's there, to really enjoy and appreciate the sun.
Do you enjoy traveling, or like, obviously you're there for work at the moment, but is it something that you enjoy besides doing it for work purposes?
Absolutely. I love it. I absolutely love it. And my dad was actually a pilot when I was growing up. So we used to travel a lot because of his work, but also just like, you know, wanting to go on adventures. And my mother's American too. So we'd go to America a lot. So I'm very used to traveling. And to do The Last Kingdom, I worked in Budapest for about, well, 8 years on and off altogether. And that was just so much fun. If anything, it gives you like a whole new element of work because you're going away from your home. You're going away from what you know. So I feel like you immediately put your mind into something completely different. So in that sense, I really enjoyed that aspect of traveling. And yeah, being in Tenerife, I mean, who could complain? I mean, it's just awesome. I honestly just pinch myself. I'm like walking around the parks going, what? This is my job. This is insane.
Yeah, and you're there for quite long periods of time, aren't you? So is it all work, or do you get time to kind of immerse yourself in the culture and the language and pick up little phrases?
Yeah, I mean, there's totally loads of downtime, which is great. We as a cast have already become so close because this is season one of the show that we're doing. It's called A Town Called Malice, which is named after the song by The Jam, if anyone knows The Jam. And we are such a tight cast already, and it's so lovely. So on downtime, we'll find fabulous restaurants and maybe walk around the park. We did a really cool rural park visit recently, which was really nice, getting right in the nature. And I just really had, yeah, just such pinch me moments of like, gosh, I can't believe I'm here. It's just such a lovely facet of the work that we do. But obviously when it is demanding on set, it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun. And like, especially when you're playing with people that you really, really love and get on with. there's just that, it's just completely awesome to have those bonds and then be able to create these relationships and dynamics together as your characters. And what's interesting about a town called Malice as well is that we play a big family. So there's already really amazing dynamics being created for us. And so, yeah, together we're exploring the culture and I'm trying to pick up a bit of Spanish, un poquito, now and then. I can say a few words. I can kind of get by, like, in the shops and stuff. I'm like, me gustaría un menú, por favor. I'm trying.
Amazing. More than me. What Aww. About Hungarian? Did you pick up any Hungarian when you were in Budapest?
I did over the years, but I will say I'm ashamed to say I should know a lot more than I do, considering how long we were over there and for how many years in total. But Hungarian is such a stunning language, but it's so hard. It's just crazy. It's where I certainly can't read it very well. But when I listen to it, I'll always ask like our amazing Last Kingdom crew and our drivers, everyone who's potentially from Hungary, whether they can teach us phrases and stuff. And they're so wonderful. My favorite phrase is hogy vagy, which is how are you?
Amazing. You're bilingual.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
So if you say you get a job and you know you're going to be away for a long while, do you have any rituals that you do before you go to kind of prepare yourself for being away from home for such a long time?
Totally. I mean, right before I'm to go anywhere, I'll try and see all my friends, you know, as much as possible. But I do know, obviously, through the pandemic and everything like that, it's not been as kind of normal to see a lot of people. But I'll check in with as many people as possible. And yeah, just go. And when, you know, I'm very lucky, actually, at the moment, I get to live in an apartment. So because we're out here for quite a long stint and we're not really going back and forth like some other jobs, you might, you know, fly out, but you might get to come back quite a lot. For this one, I'm lucky I'm out here. So I'm sort of, you know, just making the apartment my own, which is really lovely. I just feel really privileged that I get to sort of have this space to work in, but also to enjoy as like a second mini home, I guess. So I suppose the rituals for me is like, I am an extremely clean and tidy person. So I will like clean the whole place and buy all my cleaning equipment and make sure that I feel sort of safe and comfortable in the new space. But yeah, it's just, what do I bring? I mean, as you said, Molly, you are a fan of fashion, just like me. And I have so many clothes. I brought three ginormous suitcases full of clothes, and I swear to God I've only used about a third of them so far. But you know, just hanging up on my clothes and, you know, getting all the pieces that are from home that really remind you of being back there. And luckily I can have my parents here in the next few weeks, so they're going to come out and visit, so that to me is just like an extra slice, the best slice of home. So I can't wait for them to come here.
Will they be bringing any home comforts for you, anything from home that you're missing?
You'll laugh, but my favorite thing in the world is squash, like Robinson squash. I love squash. And so my mother, she's like, do you want anything? What can I get you? Just let me know, because, you know, we can't pack a lot, but if there's something you need. And I was like, squash, it's squash. I need squash. So she's going to bring the little mini like Robinson squash. They're like little squirty.
Oh yeah, I know.
So I will then be in heaven when I get my Robinson squash from home.
I think for me, it's always skincare, because you can't get certain brands in other countries.
So true. Absolutely. I am exactly the same. And I bring a lot of skincare with me, but then I get really excited when I go, like in Tenerife, it's just so beautiful. The shops are incredible. I'll go into the little independent sort of beauty boutiques and start looking at their brands and seeing like, ooh, what's this kind of stuff? And like, you know, special coconut oils and things like that. So it's nice to sort of try new brands from different countries and cultures. It's really nice.
I suppose as well, the SPF is the main thing if you're living in Tenerife at the moment.
Absolutely. I've had to be really good at just, you know, doing it every day. And, you know, I actually started putting on SPF 50 every day about 2 or 3 years ago, no matter what, even in the winter sun. My mother used to do that too. And I will say she's got amazing skin and she looks so young. And it's just, I guess it just gives me the mental security that I've put a barrier on my face against anything. So speaking of balance, I suppose that's another thing of like, okay, it's a simple step to look after your skin, but something that you'll probably really thank yourself for in the future, which is, you know, a huge thing. And speaking of skincare and balance, when I was a teenager, I used to have like the worst acne ever. And it's all, you know, come through balance in the sense of, how to sort of maintain your skin and look after it. And I used to do, probably you've heard of all this, stripping your skin with every toner possible and every alcohol. And, you know, I would just make it as dry as I could. And of course, it made it 10 times worse. And I'll never forget this lovely beautician telling me, oh, you've got to add oil to your skin. And I was like, what? And obviously, I know it's completely different for all types of skincare. So I'm not saying that this is any certain way to go. But for me, it certainly helped to have a balance and add oils to my skincare. And yeah, my skin's gotten a lot better over the years through that. So it's very interesting, like a chemistry project.
I feel like there's so much more information about skincare these days, because like you say, when we were younger, there really wasn't that much out there. And I remember those, I don't know if you remember them, those like stickers that you would put on your face to like rip out the blackheads.
And now they say that's like the worst thing you can do. And yeah. You know, oh my gosh. And I will say, like, if I'm lucky enough to go for a facial or something, I might only go like once every couple of months or 3 months. I'll go for like a sort of microdermabrasion or one of those like dermaplaning things, just something to sort of get all the toxins out of your skin and start it afresh and revive it. So there's definitely, instead of doing all, I used to do all of those strips, you name it. If it was like had witch hazel in it or if it was some strong toner, I'd be like, put a lot on my face. And of course, bless me, like the skin got so much worse. But now as a 28-year-old, I can totally tell what my skin needs so much more. Even I can see when it's really, really dry. And oftentimes I think I've got oily combination skin. But yeah, I'm so good at knowing what to pack on there.
Oh, it's such a, like, depletes your confidence so much when you have terrible skin, doesn't it? I remember being younger and being a teenager, how awful that can be.
1000%. And if anything, I got way more self-conscious from being an actor, being on camera, being, you know, looking a certain way in, you know, in high definition, you sort of think, oh my gosh. And it was in The Last Kingdom, especially, I think I got very self-conscious and not in an uber bad way, just made me go, oh, right, that's sort of what I look like. Because in The Last Kingdom, we can't really wear a lot of makeup because it's set like 1,000 years ago. And, you know, we're being quite true to the times. So the only makeup you might get is probably like aging makeup, or you might get like war makeup. So if you've been in a battle, so the dirt and the mud and everything like that and the scars. So the makeup is amazing in that sense, because everybody looks so natural, yet at the same time, so characterful. But with my character, Lady Elswift, she's not supposed to be in any way glamorous or, you know, pretty or whatever. She's not her thing. She's a wonderful, wonderful character, but she's fiercely pious, you know. So it was actually about bringing all that down. And as you can see, I'm extremely glamorous. And so for me, it was really hard to strip all that away. And then on top of that, you know, suffer from a bit of acne. And knowing that it was right there, you know, high definition, right on a massive screen, it's just like, ooh, you know. So I think that's what made me even more self-conscious. But, you know, if anything, it just taught me lessons of how to keep my skin good. And my goodness, I still get so many bad skin days. Then I just sort of think, we're all human beings, and I certainly never ever look at anyone else's skin and think anything of it. I just think everybody's beautiful. So I think there is a sense of being maybe too hyper focused on your own aesthetic, and you can dwell too much on how you look, but actually nobody else even notices or cares. Why would they care? You know, who cares sort of what you look like, in a sense?
So getting back to what we were saying about traveling and sets, is there anywhere in the world that you would like to visit and act in? Maybe the Arctic. Would you be up for somewhere really like rogue?
Fabulous. That would be really fabulous. In fact, I did do a show called The North Water, although weirdly we filmed it in Budapest, but a lot of The North Water was set in the Arctic, although none of my scenes are set in the Arctic. Mine was set in the docks of Hull, which were actually weirdly filmed in Budapest. But yeah, the Arctic would be fabulous. And I always have the idea of like somewhere like Brazil or Japan, like these. I just love those kinds of places, but I've never been. But there's so much culture. It's just so rich in culture and just, you know, wonderful things. I just think that would be amazing to experience one day. And also Ireland, because it's so breathtakingly beautiful and so close to England, of course. And also it's nice that I've got American citizenship and have done since I was born. So it would be really nice to potentially work in the States one day. I've never done that before. Just such a wonderful opportunity if I was ever lucky enough to work there, just to see what that's like, because I definitely feel like it's a whole other half of my identity that I haven't necessarily explored enough, which is really cool.
I was going to ask you actually about how you relax. And I know you've said in previous interviews that you like cooking. And I was wondering if you kind of bring your dual heritage into your cooking. Do you cook any kind of Italian, American specialities?
Totally. And I will say my mama is such a wonderful cook. So she's the Italian American one and she's fantastic at cooking and she'll make everything from scratch and she'll kind of glance at a recipe and then go, right, I know what to do. And, you know, she does her own twist and her own thing and she just amazes me. And you know, there's just something about a mother's cooking or a parent's cooking, like, you know, it's packed with love. And as cheesy as that sounds, it is so true. I know exactly what she's done to make it. I can watch her in the kitchen. I'm just always in awe of her. And my lovely dada as well. But my mum is definitely the more creative one when it comes to cooking and stuff. So yeah, I've definitely, the older I've become, way more appreciated that. And if anything, look back at all the times as a child, she'd go, come in here, watch me make this, you know, one day you're going to want to make this as well. And da, da, da. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, she's so right. I do want to learn how to make that. And yeah, I'm in the last couple of years, I've gotten much better at cooking. I think I used to see it as a chore. And speaking of balance, I think I used to think, you know, can I be bothered kind of this and that? And now I see not only is it healthier to cook because you know exactly what's going in it. You can really choose how healthy you want to be on an evening or if you're cooking lunch, whatever. And there's also that sense of the therapeutic side, which I never understood when I was 24, 25. I'd think, oh, what's therapeutic about cooking? I don't understand. And now that I'm 28, I really just see it as a time to switch off and that all your focus goes on that one thing. And I just love it. And then the creativity on the other side going, oh, I made this, my process of, you know, whatever, I made that. And especially when it's like a new recipe, if I've never done it before, I think, ooh, I feel a bit proud of myself. Even if it goes totally wrong and I've burnt it or whatever, I'm still like, oh, you know, I tried that. And like, you know, it's just fun to see the outcome for sure.
If I came around for dinner, what would you make? What's your speciality?
That's such a good question. So really, I know this isn't really Italian or American, but I love paella or paella. I love like adding different things to it all the time and like, you know, retweaking it and trying out different recipes. And I'm also massively into Asian food. And so I'd probably try like a Thai green curry to make or something like that. But when it comes to Italian food, I do like a classic sort of spaghetti and meatballs, but like homemade meatballs. You can even make like vegan vegetarian meatballs, which is really nice, do a substitute version. And yeah, a risotto, I love a risotto, like a butternut squash risotto. It's my favorite with special cheeses on top, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm trying to learn and I'm trying to get better at making big salads. Because again, when I was younger, I was like, oh, salads are boring. And now I'm like, no, I love a salad. You can literally pile all kinds of fabulous things in it and make it different every day if you want. And I now have, I know what a dork I am, but now I have much more of an excitement around salads, which is great and good as well for health and balance and everything like that. And again, if I was lucky enough to have children in the future, I'm glad that these skills and sort of ideas are coming to me now so that in the future, if I was ever to, you know, be a mother or anything like that, I have more of a healthy outlook so that I can aid them, obviously, with their diet and upbringing.
I feel like salads are a really misunderstood dish because they can actually be really filling, can't they?
So filling. And I've really gotten into doing like big butternut squash salad. So like roasting it in the oven, you're cutting it up and then tossing it with like olive oil and different, you know, herbs or, you know, just pepper even is just gorgeous. And then, yeah, putting that in a big salad, pumpkin seeds, you know, special spinach, all of that. I just love it. And then cheeses. Ooh, it's so good.
So when you have downtime and you've obviously had an amazing meal and it's time for bed and you need to make sure you're getting enough sleep before you start on your next day of work, do you have a sleep routine? Do you find it easy to get to bed?
I will say, Molly, I have to admit, anyone who knows me knows I am actually quite a terrible sleeper. And it's a really unfortunate thing that I think I've inherited from my lovely dad. I feel like there are just two types of people. There are some people, and this is my mother.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
She can lay her head on a pillow and she's out cold. That's all she has to do. She never, ever struggles to sleep. My dad and I, on the other hand, it's like a whole process. And I've really had to, over the years, try and learn what is best. And so, yes, yeah, speaking of balance there, with sleep is literally the most important thing. And I know it because, my goodness, have I been deprived of it as well for the years, just from my own lack of routine or not knowing what's good enough to do, or doing the wrong thing. And so I will say, enemy number one is the mobile phone, you know, in all territories when it comes to sleep, because it keeps your brain too active. You might then start thinking about loads of things you have to do. You know, I've got to text that person, or I've got to look up this, or I've got to, you know, I'm constantly making notes in my phone. And then I use my phone as an alarm. So I'm learning, like, to back off the phone, because I really do think it's as good as our technology is and our social media is, it's extremely detrimental to our natural functions as a human being. As human beings, we weren't supposed to be on these gadgets all day long. So this idea of just switching all of that off and trying to, yeah, just deactivate from that, you know, throughout the day. And the whole thing of, like, the light really makes your eyes, you know, strain, and it also keeps your brain too awake. So I've definitely come to realize how bad that is for me, and trying to be much better at just putting the phone away, you know, a good hour before I want to go to sleep. You just drank some water, but, like, literally, like, drinking water, just like drinking water is really, really good. Sometimes I'll read as well. I feel like that just really helps your brain to switch off. And that's something that a lot of people do. Or I'll light a candle. Let's say I don't just want to go into pitch black darkness. I light a candle for a while and just sort of, you know, smell it and just be in a nice sort of ambience and aura that's really relaxing for a while. And when I feel like I'm dozing off, I'll just blow out the candle and, you know, feel a lot more calm. But I will say, speaking back to skincare, I think doing a nice skincare routine for yourself before you go to bed is also really, really lovely and therapeutic. And again, it's that time you're just taking care of yourself for, you know, 10, 15 minutes or however long. And then, yeah, getting yourself to bed. And the older I become, the more I'm like, oh, you really have to look after yourself because nobody else will, you know, whereas when you're a child, you know, people who care about you telling you, do this, do that, you know, this is how you have to do, you know, whatever, and go to sleep. Whereas when you're older, you're like, oh, that is fully my responsibility, obviously. And even at 28, I will say I'm not even that good at it. So just, you know, speaking of balance and health, I am so much more aware these days of how, you know, monumentally important sleep is.
I don't feel like anyone has mastered getting rid of their phone before bed. And also, I was reading the other day that you shouldn't even check your phone in the morning, which is the first thing I guiltily do, because I'm like, oh my God, I've had messages in the night, got to read my emails. Apparently, it's the equivalent of, like, a group of people coming into your bedroom and, like, shouting at you in the morning.
No way.
Yeah, like, that's what it does to your brain. It's like, I love shocks that. You.
Ooh, what a wild analogy. That is actually so true. Of course, it's because that much attention to something, all of a sudden your focus is split, you know, 10 ways. And yeah, what must be activated in your brain is just crazy. So I can totally see why that is the case. Just people coming in. I want this, you know, do that. Da, da, da. And I will say, I'm almost envious of like our parents' generation, because when they went home from work, no one could really contact them. Of course, there were the landlines and, you know, fax machines, you know, and there were computers, email, but there was no way they were as much of being on demand as we are. And in one sense, all that connectivity is really, really good. But every day without fail, I think of how nice it must have been for them to really clock off. When they went home to their families or they went out to visit friends, there wasn't another element, i.e. a phone, to get in the way of that interaction. So when they were with their friends, wherever, you know, look at how wholesome I'm going to sound, I was like at the bowling alley, or it's like a scene out of Grease or something. But it's just that sense of they really did just put their energy in the direction it needed to go, wherever that was, rather than it being so scattered the way, you know, us as in modern day have to scatter it because we are on demand. And I suppose, you know, in certain ways, I'm really always trying to keep on top of things. But oftentimes, you know, you can't help but maybe let a friend down if you're not around for FaceTime, or you're not. Whereas back in our parents' day, you know, it's like, I'll see you when I see you. So in some ways, I'm kind of envious of them.
I feel like it can be difficult if you're working, like me and you, we both work in highly competitive industries. If you miss the email from someone with an opportunity, that's it. You could lose out on a massive chance to do something amazing. And that kind of brings about this nervousness of being away from your phone for too long, because you're like, oh, I could get the big break. And then the big break's missed because you weren't with your phone.
Yeah, totally, Molly. I completely agree with you. There's always this like pressure to be connected to everything at all times. And which is one sense, for anything, I'd say us as a generation should pat ourselves on the back. I know we get a lot of stick. There's this whole like, oh, the millennials and this, they love their phones. But in a way, we've been adapted to live in those circumstances. We have been now fine-tuned to work in this way. And if anything, it's then up to us to kind of facilitate that. And as you say, we get into trouble if we don't adhere by the new circumstances and the new ways of living and, you know, the sense of always being on demand, because you say other people will get that, then other people will be in touch, other people will be connected with, and they'll get the jobs or they'll get the this and that. Whereas, yeah, back in the day, I suppose, you know, someone looked at your CV and said, that looks good, come on in. And now it's just like a plethora of people and opportunities, which in some senses is wonderful because it opens so many doors for so many people. But yeah, there is that other sense of going, well, I better be on my game and keep it up all the time so that I can, yeah, get what I want and whatever. And I will say, even within the acting industry, the most amazing like part of casting is like, you know, casting directors really do find talent, and they can look for it anywhere these days now, in the sense that it doesn't even have to be actors or anyone who's even had like acting experience. It could be that there's like a look or an aesthetic that they want in somebody. They think that looks right for this film or this play or whatever it is. So it's amazing how technology has even opened up worlds like that. But then, as you say, that only adds more pressure of like, oh, okay, and, you know, anyone, you know, this job is up for grabs for anybody. So you've got to kind of be on your game, I suppose. But then I guess for me, I'm in a very lucky position at the moment, getting to work on a project and knowing that now is the time to start not switching off of things, but just being like more aware that I can now just enjoy the work that I'm doing now, currently be as present as possible, which is another thing at the age of 28, I'm way more aware of than I was at like sort of 25. I used to think, what does that mean, being present? And now I'm like, oh my gosh, I so feel it when I'm giving somebody my full energy or attention, or if I'm receiving their full energy or attention, it makes such a huge difference. And I can feel myself not doing it at times and then thinking, oh, that, why did that interaction not feel as good as it could have? Oh, I wasn't fully invested in it. Why? Because I wasn't present or whatever. So yeah, I'm way more aware of things at 28. 28 feels like a very good age for me. I'm like, oh yeah, it's like I've just like figured out all of life.
Do you have any advice for anyone who is dealing with the nerves of like getting into an industry that's maybe very pressurized?
Totally. I mean, I will say, just as long as you work hard and keep preparing in any which way that you feel suitable is always going to put you in good stead. And I will say, like, a competitive industry means you're not always going to get everything. And that's actually okay. And actually, I was speaking to somebody recently about the word like rejection or the word mistake or the word no. They have such negative connotations. But if anything, and I know, again, I'm speaking from quite a lucky position in this sense, but I've definitely had so many no's, so many rejections throughout my time in this industry, way more no's than I could ever receive yes. But if anything, that's just made me go, okay, I'm not going to take it personally, because it could be down to the most trivial little things, especially with casting and acting. It could be, you know, you're not the right height, you don't have the right color eyes, you know, you're not the right age, and you could be a very talented person, but it's, you're not necessarily completely right for that particular role, and that's okay. So knowing, like, not to take things personally and just to keep moving on, keep, you know, developing, but keep preparing. Because I think as long as you walk in a room and you've done everything in your power possible to do what you can do best, you can never leave that room, even if you've received a rejection or a no or whatever, never to take that as a bad thing. Because if anything, what you've done is planted a seed in that, let's say it's about acting, that casting director or that producer's mind of that you are a wonderful actor, you're really prepared, really talented, really hardworking, and they can just think about you for the next project. And I will say, I'm testament to this, because where I'm sitting right now is a cause of that exact thing. The wonderful casting director who cast this project saw me for something years ago and really, really liked it. And I wasn't quite right for it, but it was the sense of, okay, I'm going to look out for something for you in the future. And if, you know, another opportunity were to arise, we'll bring you in for that and see what you can do there. And because I had done a lot of work for that previous audition, it meant for then this one, they already knew what I was capable of. But then there's a sense of, right, I'm going to, you know, really give it my all again. And of course, then it worked out. So you just never know that just by working really hard, even if it's a no for that one particular thing, especially in a competitive industry, never to berate yourself or beat yourself up, because mental health wise, I've seen so many phenomenal actors and wonderful people losing themselves because of how tough this industry is and actually forgetting how brilliant they are. And then when you lose sight of that, your self-esteem can lower very easily. And actually that's so dangerous and so not what anyone is in this business for. And I think if that starts to happen, you really just have to assess, you know, why you want to be an actor. Does it really bring true happiness and everything like that? And if so, then keep preparing, keep working hard. And even if rejection still comes your way, that's always temporary. In my head, rejection is so temporary in our industry. It comes and goes. And if you're right for this part, you will get that part. I always believe that.
For you, you've obviously played some real life people. You've played Princess Eugenie, and then you've also played Lady Ellsworth. Is there an added pressure of playing real life people?
That's such a good question. In a way, with Lady Ellsworth, there wasn't a lot of information about her actually from the time. So the only sort of information I could derive before playing her were the works of Bernard Cornwell, who'd written the Saxon Stories, which is the sort of set of novels that The Last Kingdom is all based on. So in a sense, I could get a little bit from that, but I could kind of do whatever I wanted in a way. And the scriptwriter certainly pushed me in a certain direction with Ellsworth. It was very much in the first three seasons, this element that she was actually the antagonist. She was somebody who was more villainized. She was always in the path of like destruction. She was always trying to sort of destroy Uhtred, our like lead, you know, amazing warrior. So there's a sense of like, actually, she wasn't always the nicest of characters. So it totally then led me to play her like that. So I wasn't then too worried about being as accurate as possible, because there wasn't actually enough information to go off anyway. So that was really fun, because that just gave me full liberty to go wild. And then by season five, I'm doing all kinds of crazy things. If anyone has seen season five, they will know exactly what I mean. And, you know, that's just fabulous that the scriptwriters could have that much freedom with it. And then brilliant for me to be able to play it, because I love that kind of stuff and just being able to go for it. And then with Princess Eugenie, however, who is obviously in our, you know, current times, there was definitely a sense of, oh my gosh, this is a real person who exists. But I will say we did it within the Windsors Endgame, which was a stage production of the Channel 4 show, The Windsors, which if anyone has seen The Windsors on Channel 4, it is absolutely bonkers. It's extremely heightened, stylized, caricatured. It's taking like a slice of real life and then amplifying it by thousands. So anything you watch on that show, it's just so warped and not real, in a sense that you know it's just totally sardonic and sarcastic and, you know, caricature. So in a sense, again, I was lucky in that sense that the stage version of it as well was okay, this is real person, so that it's based on a couple of things, however, make it your own, go crazy, and, you know, make it stylized and heightened. And I loved that aspect of it, because then I didn't feel too, yeah, sort of unsafe to not go for it.
Now, we must talk about The Last Kingdom before we finish, because it's the last season ever, which is really sad. But this has been a mainstay of your life since you were 21. So if you compare yourself to when you started The Last Kingdom till now, what do you think you've learned over that time about yourself?
Molly, that's such a good question. Honestly, I have learned so much in abundance that I wouldn't even know where to begin. I just think this sense of naturally growing older, you do develop into a different person. And I will say I'm a completely different person from the age of 21 to 28. Acting wise, I've learned so much on that job. Like, The Last Kingdom has taught me everything I know about screen acting. It's given me all the sort of confidence to be able to really play anything on screen. I feel like season one, I was still very young. I hadn't done a lot of screen work. I'd only been really used to stage. And so I was quite petrified when the camera was in front of me, right in my face, of knowing what to do with it. Is, you know, I almost saw it as like a foe, but now I see it as a complete friend. I now totally feel comfortable with the camera there. And I know not exactly how it will be used, but I have such a clearer vision of what the camera's doing right now in that sense. And so feeling really comfortable to make interesting choices and to really go for it. And not to worry also about being too subtle as well. I feel like The Last Kingdom is such a wonderful high stakes show. Every single scene is full of unbelievable twists and turns, people in danger, just the most amazing writing and the most incredible characters that you just fall in love with, and you just, you know, wish them really well or wish them really ill, or, you know, you just can't believe what's going to happen next. So being immersed in that world really made me think, right, this is like, you can really go for it. You can really have fun with this. And again, because Lady Elsa's so different from me, yeah, learning how to really tap into somebody so far away from me was so lovely. But then also knowing that there's a, you know, having the camera right there only just added, I think, so much to like my acting skills. And I will say, I still don't have a clue what I'm doing. I never have a clue what I'm doing, really. But it's definitely given me an unbelievable amount of, I guess, security in just knowing that the camera is your friend.
Knowing what you know now, is there anything that you would like go back in time and tell the younger Eliza?
Ooh, maybe, I guess maybe not to beat myself up so much, actually. I think I would come off of, like, let's say the filming sets and think, oh, I didn't get that, or I didn't really, you know, I guess the sense of feeling like constantly, yeah, just being quite harsh on myself, when actually looking back, I did everything I could in the moment. I think that's why I always say that as advice, as long as you've done everything you can, possibly you can't really come away from it beating yourself up. And, you know, even if there was more to be done, we're still just humans at the end of the day. And, you know, I care enough about the job that I do that I always know it's going to be okay. And the editors are so fantastic. They know how to maneuver the edit to make it really pack a punch, or really make it as clear as possible or as emotional as possible. They're so good at knowing how to, yeah, sort of create the story that in a sense you're always in safe hands. I feel, you know, especially working on big television shows like that, there's so much else around you that in a sense, I feel like when I was younger, I could have taken the pressure off myself a little bit and really just enjoyed every moment. But I will say, because The Last Kingdom is such a family, the more we did it, the more comfortable we became.
Yeah, you're, obviously this is a massive opportunity in a way with it ending, because you can go on and do other things and explore new areas. But did, when it came to an end finally, did you feel a sense of bereavement from that?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's more a bereavement with all the people that we've met along the way. This thing of like working with these people day in, day out, you just, yeah, everybody just absolutely adored each other. And I know that sounds so silly, but it's true. There was a really tight bond between everybody on the show and between cast and crew. And, you know, we had some of the most incredible crew working on the show since 2014 when it began, all the way till, you know, now they've done this spin-off movie. So even into 2022, so that there's just unbelievable commitment to the show, and to know that people have been looking after it for so long and have been caring about it for so long and been passionate about it. And the fans, it's, and to me, the bereavement is like, whew, with the fans, that connection that we've all created, you know, with them throughout all the years, and how wonderful they've been, so into the show and so immersed in it. And I get the most amazing messages from fans just describing to me their favorite scenes and the bits that moved them the most. And I think that part of the show, not having that connection with these people anymore, well, not anymore, because the show will always exist, people will always get to watch it and be involved with it. But I think the bereavement of creating more for them feels like kind of heartbreaking. And saying goodbye to the characters is always so heartbreaking, knowing I'm not going to play Lady Elspeth again, really. Unless it's like in a really funny way for something, or like, you know, marrying someone at somebody's wedding, but dressed as Lady Elspeth going, "You are now husband and wife," some sort of thing.
But it's true what they say, as one door closes, another one opens. And you're already doing new things. So what's next for you? Is there anything in particular that you'd like to try? Any like genres or anything that you'd be really intrigued to do?
Oh, Molly, so I'm so lucky that at the moment I'm working on this project, A Town Called Malice, which couldn't be further from Lady Elspeth and the Last Kingdom if I tried. It's an amazing TV show. It's set in the 1980s. It's partly set in Bermondsey in South London, and then also partly set in the Costa del Sol of Spain. So there's this really fabulous, glamorous, vibrant world of the show. And what's really awesome is that everybody loves 80s music. It brings such nostalgia, even though, you know, I wasn't even born in the 80s, I was born in 1993, but just the sense, even for me, it brings me nostalgia, just knowing about that fabulous era of time. And so it's so rooted in the music. There's the most incredible costumes. It's so fun, but it's also so gritty. And again, follows the most incredible character storylines. So I feel like the audience that will watch A Town Called Malice will totally fall in love with these amazing dynamic characters. And as I said earlier, we are kind of a big family called the Lords. And this family basically go on the run, and they get themselves into all kinds of situations and trouble. And it's kind of a bit gangstery, it's a bit raw, but at the same time, it's highly stylized, absolutely gorgeous, and just like fun, as well as being really, really engaging and dramatic. So I think it's awesome for me to play, because my character is called Carly Lord, and she's very, very glamorous, very, very girly. She's just a really sort of fun and fabulous person, often a little bit ditzy, but her character goes in some amazing avenues throughout the season. So it's just going to be so exciting to keep playing it. It's so awesome.
Well, I'm sure there'll be loads of people looking forward to that, including me, when it comes out finally. Yes. That's all of my questions. Thank you so much for talking to me. What else are you going to be doing today? Are you going to be lazing on the beach in Tenerife?
I think so. It's actually a really sunny day, so I'm going to go out, maybe find some food, do some lovely things, go for a lovely walk, and just, yeah, enjoy the sunshine a bit more for sure.
Oh my God, so jealous, sat here in London.
Come on over, please come on over and enjoy my incredible pineapple wallpaper that I have behind me.
Yeah, I should just say that Eliza is wearing a brilliant yellow top, which is perfectly matching with her pineapple wallpaper.
Yes.
Is it tapas this afternoon that you're probably going to be having?
Oh, that will be a dream. I didn't think tapas, but now that you've said that, Molly, it has to be tapas. We have to find tapas. That would be the best.
Oh my God, you're living everyone's dream. So jealous. Well, look, thank you so much for talking to me today. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me. I've absolutely loved talking to you, Molly. And it's just so nice to explore all the themes of balance and also about acting. And yeah, it's just a wonderful thing to get to talk about. And yeah, it's just amazing to speak to you. Thank you so much for having me.
We'll be right back. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.